quiet place. Her face was hard to read in the weak porch light, and he squirmed a little as he felt a long-buried guilt resurface. Cameron may not have told his wife everything, but looking at her now, Nathan could bet he had told her some things.
"No," he said firmly. "No doubt."
Ilse's face altered a fraction into another expression he couldn't interpret. Sophie's voice rang out again. "Oh, for God's sake, I'd better go." She opened the door and paused for a moment. "Good night, Nathan."
"Good night."
She disappeared inside, and Nathan looked down at Duffy, who wagged her tail and offered no comment. Nathan sat there for a minute longer, then put Sophie's guitar down and wandered down the veranda steps and out into the dark of the yard, Duffy at his heels. He waited for his eyes to adjust. All was quiet from the backpacker's caravan. They must have made their peace for now at least. When he could see well enough to make out Carl Bright's grave underneath the gum tree, he walked over and stood at the edge, unable to shake the feeling that he'd stuffed up. He'd meant to reassure Ilse, but could tell he'd missed the mark. He had fallen short in defending Cameron, and not for the first time. Nathan looked down at where his dad lay.
"What's this bullshit I hear about some girl?"
Carl had said. He'd hung up his call from the sergeant and summoned his two eldest sons. Nathan remembered hovering, his back against the wall, as Cameron stuttered through an explanation. After a minute, Carl had cut him short and turned to Nathan.
"Where were you when this was going on? Sniffing after that little bitch next door?"
"Jackie, you mean?" The back of Nathan's head bounced against the wall with a sharp smack. Carl hadn't even bothered to look at him properly as he'd lifted an arm and taken a swipe, his attention focused on Cameron. The blow had come too fast for Nathan to defend himself, not that he necessarily would have anyway. Sometimes it was easier not to. He realised Carl was still waiting for an answer, and this time Nathan just nodded. "Yeah, I was with Jackie."
"Why weren't you looking out for your brother?"
Nathan had no idea what to say to that.
"You saw them, though?"
Carl was pointing at Cam, but shouting at Nathan.
"Go on then, tell me. Has he done something I need to worry about?"
Carl's eyes were on him now. Their gazes drew level these days, and Nathan wondered why he was still flooded with the same terror he'd felt his whole life. The feeling that came whenever Carl raised his voice or his hands or both, when Nathan had been forced to burn his guitar. It would never change, Nathan realised with a terrible flash of clarity. Carl wouldn't stop and Nathan didn't seem to be able to make him, so perhaps they were stuck like this for the rest of their lives. He was exhausted by the thought. His head hurt from the blow. He looked at Cameron, and whatever his brother had or hadn't done, Nathan was suddenly sick of it all. He didn't want any of this. It wasn't him bringing that kind of trouble home. He at least had the bloody sense to check he had the nod from Jackie before he took her pants off. Nathan's head was still ringing as he looked from Carl to Cameron, and all at once he didn't want to be near either of these men. He wanted to be all alone somewhere far away. He was still thinking about that when Cameron brushed his arm lightly with his elbow and brought him back with a jolt. Nathan realised his mistake, and opened his mouth and did what he would expect Cam to do for him, have his back.
"No," he said. Cam didn't do anything.
In reality, the answer had come only a beat late, not even that, half a beat. A delay so slight it was barely discernible, but Carl had noticed it, as his eyes slid from one son to the other.
"Right,"
he said, in a voice that suggested that for once he understood his boys perfectly.
"Leave. I need to talk to your brother."
And with that, Nathan was dismissed. He had sat in his car with the door shut so he couldn't hear anything coming from the house. He saw Bub sneak out and opened the passenger door to let him climb in. He could tell Bub wanted to ask questions, and Nathan felt he should try to answer, but when neither found the words, they simply sat together in shamed silence. Nathan, already guilt-ridden, used the time to rehearse in his head what he would say to Cameron.
I didn't mean to hesitate. It meant nothing.
He'd learned a long time ago to think first and talk second because Carl did not like getting the wrong answer.
I was scared, Cam. I was scared of Dad. I'm sorry. I know you didn't do anything wrong.
Nathan wanted to say all that and more to Cameron, and he did later, several times. It made no difference. It took a long time for Cameron to look Nathan in the eye again. When he did, it was through a shadow of betrayal that never, in 20 years, fully went away. Chapter 18. Xander's room was empty when Nathan went back inside, but he could hear the shower running in the bathroom. A half-read book lay open on Xander's bed. It was the same book Nathan had bought to give his son for Christmas, he noticed with annoyance. The card being used as a bookmark indicated it was a gift from Xander's stepfather, Martin, an architect whose work with dazzling reflective polished metal surfaces was occasionally described in newspapers as polarizing. Nathan took a deep breath, closed the door, and walked back to the living room. Through the window, he could still make out the dark outline of the backpacker's caravan. He watched it for a minute, thinking about what Sophie said, then turned and fired up the family computer on the desk in the corner. 10 minutes later, he had managed to access the wheezing internet and was waiting for a social media site to flicker to life. When it finally loaded, he clicked on the search bar and typed in Katie's name. The computer grunted as Nathan scrolled through the search results slowly the first time, then twice more. Nothing. Nothing that he could see anyway. There were plenty of people with the same name as Katie, but none with a profile or picture that seemed to match. He checked his watch. Not long until the generator went down for the night. He tapped in Simon's name next, scrolling as fast as the groaning technology would let him. He was on the third page when the floorboards in the hall creaked. Harry appeared in the doorway. He glanced at the computer but couldn't see the screen from where he stood.
"I've been talking to Bub," he said.
"Oh, yeah?" From his face, Nathan could guess what this was about.
"And we both know Bub gets things wrong from time to time," Harry said.
"Sometimes.
So I'm seriously hoping he's wrong about you not having your gun license anymore."
"I didn't get around to renewing it."
"Bullshit. What, for the first time in your life it slipped your mind, did it?"
Nathan said nothing.
"You've surrendered all your weapons to Glenn."
"Those are the rules, Harry."
"It's basic equipment, mate."
"I'll get it renewed."
"You're all the way out there on your own. You turn your radio off for days at a time."
"Jesus, Harry, I said I'll renew it."
"Does your mum know that's how you're living?"
"I'm sure you'll tell her."
"Does Xander?"
The question hung in the air. "Did you want something else, Harry?" Nathan said at last, his voice cold. Harry gazed back unmoved until Nathan was the one to look away.
"Generator's going off in 10.
He disappeared from the doorway and Nathan stared at the computer screen until the glow made his eyes water. He blinked, then checked the time again. Progress had been slow, but he'd seen enough to know that there wasn't much to be found of the backpackers online. That wasn't unheard of, but it was unusual. Nathan could count on one hand the number of backpackers he'd known to resist the temptation to upload a string of identical photos of rocks and sky and cows for the folks back home. He looked at the clock once more, then, as fast as the computer would allow, opened a fresh search window and typed in a new name. There were a lot of results for Jenna Moores in the UK. He might have been sifting through them for hours if someone hadn't already beaten him to it. A link came up right at the top. the different coloured font showing it had already been clicked on at least once before on that computer. Nathan had no idea if it was possible to find out when. Maybe Xander would know. For now, he clicked on the link again. She had become a florist. She ran her own business and there was a photo of her planting something tall and green into a pot. The braid was gone and the 20-odd years were visible on her face, but it was her. Her photographic smile was wide but slightly stilted, and Nathan got the impression several attempts had been made to get the shot right. Jenna's fingers were partly buried in soil, but he could see no wedding ring. He wondered what Jenna's boyfriend from the time was up to these days, but he couldn't remember the guy's name. He wasn't even sure he'd ever known it. He looked at Jenna's face. There was a phone number at the top of the screen. Nathan reached for a pen, wrote it down and stood up. The hallway was empty and the kitchen and Ilse's office were both dark as he picked up the phone and dialed. He listened to the ringtone and was just realising he had no idea what time it was in England when someone answered. "Good morning, Northern Blooms." The voice was chirpy. "Is Jenna Moore there, please?"
"She's on leave, I'm afraid. Can I help you with something?"
Nathan hesitated. "She was trying to get in touch with my brother." He waited, but there was no discernible reaction down the line. "I wanted to pass on some information. Does she have another number I can try?" "Oh, no, I'm sorry." The girl sounded genuinely apologetic. "Not one I can give out, unfortunately, but it wouldn't be much help anyway. She's abroad and out of mobile range." Nathan looked at the landline cord in his hand. "Really? I can take your number if you like." "I'm actually out of mobile range myself, as a matter of fact."
"Are you?"
The girl sounded amused by the novelty.
"I don't suppose you're on a yoga retreat in Bali by any chance?"
"No," Nathan said. "No, I'm not." "Suppose that would be too much of a coincidence." She laughed. In his other ear, Nathan heard a soft electronic whump and he was plunged into darkness. The generator was off. The vanished light from the hall left a ghostly glow in his eyes. He blinked, temporarily blind. "Where are you based?" he said, as the grey outlines of furniture slowly started to take shape.
"At the end of Bell Street."
"Sorry, I meant which city?"
"Oh, Manchester."
Nathan wasn't sure where that was. Somewhere northern, he guessed.
"Anyway," the voice was saying, "she'll be back in the store in, bear with me, 11 days, if you'd like to try her again."
It was then that Nathan heard the noise. Not on the phone, something at his end, faint in the night stillness.
Harry, maybe?
The window beside him was a black square. He could see nothing but his own reflection in the glass. "Jenna's definitely still in Bali," he said. He heard the noise again and looked over his shoulder. Had it come from inside the house? He held his breath. Another soft thud. No, it was outside. He turned back to the window. Still nothing. "Yes, not looking forward to coming back to the freezing weather. She says it's almost too hot, if you can imagine."
"Is that right?"
Nathan looked out into the inky darkness. "Well, thanks for your help."
"You're welcome. And thank you for your interest in Northern Blooms."
Nathan hung up. Outside, the yard was black. There was no movement at all. He waited a minute, then two. Nothing. He was about to turn away when he heard the noise again. Chapter 19. Nathan stepped into the dark and waited for his eyes to adjust to the sliver of moonlight. The back door creaked behind him and he pulled it shut. He stood patiently and listened. A muffled thump. He followed the noise around the side of the house. A glow seeped out from under the garage door, soft, but enough to ruin his night vision. He walked over slowly, telling himself not to be ridiculous while still treading quietly. He recognised the back of the head immediately,
It was half in, half out of a low cupboard, the shadows stark under a battery-powered hurricane lamp. And here I am, thinking this is my big chance to catch Lowe's burglar red-handed, Nathan said, leaning against the door. The head turned, and Xander looked up. What's going on? Nathan nodded at the cupboard Xander was searching through. Couldn't sleep?
No.
Xander stood up and wiped his hands on his jeans. I keep thinking about what Lowe said about Uncle Cam looking for something. Sophie thought she might be confused. Xander ran the back of his hand across his forehead, leaving a dusty smear. What did Ilse say about it?
I don't know. She hasn't really talked to me about it.
Oh, right. I just thought she might have. Nathan pulled up a cracked plastic chair and sat down. The garage had doubled as a bolt hole for Cameron by the look of things, with benchtop space and a battered desk in the corner.
You found anything then?
No. Doesn't help not knowing what to search for. Could be anything. Or nothing, I suppose. Nathan looked at Xander. Every time he saw his son these days, he seemed more grown up. But now, standing there with his shoulders and back broadening out and dust on his hands, he looked like a man.
Where have you looked?
Round here so far. Xander waved a hand at one side of the garage. Think you'll be out here much longer?
I don't know. Till I find something, I guess, or get too tired.
He shrugged.
I'd better give you a hand then.
Nathan pulled himself up. He opened the nearest storage cupboard and came face to face with neatly stacked tools.
I've already checked there. Maybe try that one.
Xander pointed.
Okay.
Nathan moved across. He didn't expect to find anything. He had no idea whether Lowe was right about Cam's missing items, but even if she was, he couldn't imagine that his brother hadn't thought to look in his own garage. He suspected Xander felt the same, but he knew that sometimes there was value in doing something, anything, even if that something was rifling through dusty drawers. They worked side by side, developing a sort of rhythm as they moved through the garage. Open, check, close. He kept an eye on where he was putting his hands and feet, though. There were plenty of snakes around those parts that he really did not want to catch by surprise. The work might seem pointless, but Nathan was happy to do it if it made Xander feel better. When Nathan and Jackie had got married, she'd had to insist on a baby. He'd never actually agreed, but he hadn't exercised his options to resist either, so it had happened. Whatever their differences, he was still grateful to Jackie for that. He sometimes thought he wouldn't have minded another couple of kids if things had turned out differently. Nathan had felt pretty detached during her pregnancy, only wading in when he'd had to save the kid from some of her bullshit name suggestions. He hadn't been crash hot about Xander, and still wasn't, to be honest. It wasn't even Alex, which at least sounded okay, shouted across a paddock. Only when Jackie had started musing about the potential of Jasper had Nathan thrown his wholehearted support behind naming their son Alexander. She'd been right in the end, Nathan thought. Xander was a good fit for the lifestyle his kid had ended up leading. So you're planning on going on to uni, eh? Nathan said, and Xander looked up from the box he was sifting through. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Need to get good marks for that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Listen, your mum said you'd probably need to stay in Brisbane during the holidays now. Have time to study a bit more, do your homework properly. There was a pause. I might do. Because if you do, Nathan made himself say it. That's fine, mate. Whatever you need to do is fine with me. I mean, you're always welcome to bring your books here. Nice and quiet. I wouldn't get in your way. It's mostly online. I need fast internet.
All right, yeah. Well, better in Brisbane. Makes sense.
I'm sorry. It's fine. Honestly, mate. It's not that I don't like visiting. I know. Because I do. It's, mate,
I know. You've got things you need to focus on. I get it. And you should do it. Get the marks. Go to uni. You're smart enough for it.
Thanks.
Xander gave a small smile. You never wanted to go? Nathan shook his head. Not for me. In fact, he had never considered it, always assuming he would end up back on the property where the cattle didn't ask to see your qualifications. Then Cameron had surprised him by applying to a uni course in Adelaide. He'd come back 3 years later with a degree in agribusiness, a lot of big ideas, and a handful of new friends who occasionally came to get dust on their inappropriate city shoes and look around in wide-eyed amusement. When they spoke to Nathan at all, it was in voices a little louder and slower than normal.
It's weird, Xander said, his hands in an open box. Going through someone's stuff after they're gone. All these things that were important to Uncle Cam. And now someone else has to get rid of it all, or whatever.
Yeah, they'll still need a lot of this, though, Nathan said. Property still needs to be run.
By you?
I have enough trouble with my own place. Who then? Bub? They'll hire a manager, probably. I guess Ilsa will decide. She gets Cam's half.
Xander ran his finger through the thin layer of dust on the lid of a battered storage box.
Cam didn't give Bub a bigger share? Or leave anything for Harry?
Doesn't sound like it. Bub still has his third, though.
Yeah, but you and Ilsa have the rest.
Something in the way he said it made Nathan look over in surprise.
So?
So nothing, I suppose. But her half plus your sixth makes a majority. Wonder how Bub feels about that.
He shouldn't feel anything. It's exactly the same split as it was with Cam.
But it's not the same, is it? When Cam was alive, it was him and Bub controlling the place.
I'm not sure Bub saw it like that.
Nathan thought about his brother scowling at the calendar in the study.
Well, either way, it was clearly you in the minority. Now it'll be more like you and Ilsa in control. It's a different dynamic.
It's not.
There's nothing.
Dad, mate, Xander said, a half smile on his face. It is. Nathan felt a flush creep up his neck. He didn't reply.
Don't worry, Xander said, reading his mind. I don't think anyone else has noticed.
You should think about it, though. When it comes to decisions, who would you side with? Ilsa or Bub?
Neither. I'd do what's best for the property.
Nathan saw his son's expression.
I would. All right.
Does Bub know that, though? Or Ilsa?
Yeah, of course, Nathan frowned. Of course they knew, because it was the truth.
Well, that's okay then. Xander opened another cupboard. Nathan pulled a new box off a shelf. It seemed to hold nothing more than old electrical wiring. He stifled a yawn. He was getting tired now, but didn't want to be the one to pull the pin. He sifted through it half-heartedly, looking at the black square of night outside the door. There was nothing to see, but Nathan knew he was facing south. Somewhere in the distance lay the stockman's grave, and beyond that, his own property. His house would be empty over the invisible horizon, but he could almost feel it sucking him in. It was actually a pretty decent house with nice enough furniture. Jackie hadn't bothered taking a single thing other than Xander when she'd left. It was the land around the house that was the problem. It was a constant headache. But it was Nathan's livelihood, and he simply could not afford to let it slide, not even a bit. But sometimes, all the time really, he wished he had somewhere else to go. He hated that house. The place felt like a black hole that extinguished all the light in his life. He had seriously considered abandoning the property several times. Downing tools, leaving the door swinging open and driving away. Maybe try to get some work in the mines out west, but he worried he was getting a bit old for that now. And while Nathan could abandon the land,
He couldn't abandon the debts on it. They stayed on the bank's balance sheets and would still need to be paid off somehow. Thank God that Liz and Harry had convinced him to keep his sixth of Burley Downs. After expenses, the income from that wasn't enough to keep him afloat, but at least it was something.
"Sell your place to Cam,"
Harry had said 2 Christmases ago, after a particularly bad year had left Nathan white-faced with stress.
"You're always going to struggle on your own. Let him buy you out, mate. Get the scale."
Nathan had said he'd think about it. By that point, he had already privately asked his brother 3 times. Cam would dutifully pore over the spreadsheet Nathan had prepared, asking questions and stroking his chin as Nathan tried to find positive answers where none existed. Cam always responded in the same way. Whether Nathan was asking him to look at a spreadsheet or begging him years earlier to put in a good word in town, Cam would pause for a fraction of a beat, just as Nathan had done once under their dad's hard stare when the tables were turned and it was a teenage Cameron who needed the help. It still surprised Nathan how much could be conveyed in such a thin slice of silence. Cameron's answer was always no. Now, though, as Nathan looked out to the south, a new thought edged to the surface. Xander was right, and Bub for that matter. Without Cam, things were different. Without Cam, Nathan realised he could probably push the sale through if he could get Ilsa or Bub to agree. He let himself imagine for a moment what that might mean, and suddenly, for the first time since he had driven over the crest and seen Cameron's body under the tarp, Nathan could breathe a little more easily. "Dad." He dragged his attention back to the garage. Xander was holding something square and heavy-looking and partially covered by bubble wrap. A large paper bag lay discarded by his feet. "What's that?" Nathan dusted off his hands and walked over. He could see Cameron had written Ilse's name on the bag in neat capital letters. Xander moved into the light so Nathan could see what he was holding. It was one of Lowe's paintings, and it had been professionally framed. It showed a family of 4, with Cameron fully recognisable alongside his wife and 2 daughters. Everyone in Lowe's picture was smiling, for once. "There's a card as well." Xander held it out. It was a small square with a picture of lilies on the front. Nathan could tell from Xander's face that he'd already read what was inside. Nathan opened it and read the words in Cameron's distinctive handwriting. "Forgive me." Chapter 20. In the morning, Ilsa was already gone. Nathan had woken far later than usual, opening his eyes to find daylight creeping through the curtains in the living room. He and Xander had stayed up too long, the hurricane lamp burning in the garage as they sat and stared at Cameron's words. "Forgive me." Eventually, Nathan had taken the card and put it in his pocket. "You going to show it to Ilsa?" Xander had said. "Yeah, tomorrow." But the house was quiet as Nathan dressed. From the window, he could make out the small shapes of Sophie and Lo playing some sort of game in the garden while Liz watched. Even from that distance, Nathan could see the slump to her shoulders and the exhausted curve of her spine. There was no sign of Ilsa with them. Neither was she in the kitchen, where Katie was cleaning up alone, or in her office. Nathan walked back down the hall and checked on Xander, who was still sleeping. Relaxed against the pillow, his face looked younger than it had the night before. Nathan closed the door. Across the hallway was the girl's bedroom. It had been Cameron's room when they were kids. Nathan stood, remembering all those bleary-eyed pre-dawn mornings when he had opened his door and come face to face with his brother. Since taking over the property, Cameron had slept in the master bedroom at the end of the hall. Cameron and Ilsa, anyway. Liz had moved to the smaller bedroom along from the girls where she'd said she was happier. The door of the master bedroom was open, and Nathan wandered up and peered inside. The big items of furniture didn't look like they had been replaced since the room had belonged to his mum and dad, but the space was unfamiliar beyond that. Someone, Ilsa presumably, had painted the walls and added photos of the girls and a few other personal touches. The room looked cared for, but now felt... Nathan tried to put his finger on it. Disturbed. The bed was made, but badly, and the deep dents in the pillows hinted at a poor night's sleep. Old coffee cups left clusters of rings on the bedside table. On Ilse's side, he guessed. A bottle of painkiller stood among them with its cap off. A few pills were scattered loose beside the cups. Nathan glanced back at the girls' room, then at the bottle on the table. He hesitated, then walked in, the floorboards creaking loudly under his boots. He gathered up the loose pills, tipped them into the bottle, and clicked the safety cap on. He checked the label. It was only over-the-counter paracetamol, but there were a lot of tablets in the bottle. He stood there for a while, then returned the bottle to where he'd found it. He stepped out into the hall and grunted as he collided heavily with someone in the shadows. They both stumbled. It took Nathan a beat to place the man in front of him in the dim light. Simon. Simon's gaze flicked past Nathan to the bedroom behind him, then settled with an expression that was hard to read. "I've been trying to find you," he said.
"I was looking for Ilse."
Nathan could hear the defensive note in his tone and cleared his throat. He didn't have to explain. "She went riding along the drive about an hour ago."
"Ah, thanks. And what do you want?"
"Phone call for you."
"For me?"
Nathan couldn't think of a single person who would want to speak to him.
"Who is it?"
Simon shrugged. "Someone you've been trying to reach, apparently." It was the electrical contractor.
"Dave," Nathan said as he heard the man's voice. "How's my cool room?"
"I couldn't tell you, mate. I was out at your place on Friday like we arranged, but I couldn't get in."
"To the cool room?"
"To your house. It was locked."
"But..."
Nathan squeezed his eyes shut.
Shit.
The only time he ever bothered to lock his doors was when Xander was staying. The chance of the kid's laptop getting stolen was zero, but it seemed to make Xander feel better. Dave's voice was crystal clear down the line. That didn't bode well. He must be somewhere well populated.
"Please tell me you're still in the area," Nathan said anyway.
"Nah, sorry. Had to head home. Christmas with the kids."
Christ.
Nathan had been waiting 3 weeks for the contractor to get enough jobs to make the trip from St. Helens worth his while.
"You couldn't have broken in?"
"Well, I could have."
Dave sounded mildly offended.
"But I didn't know how you'd feel about that."
"I would have felt fine about it. I need the bloody thing working."
Dave allowed a brief silence to convey his displeasure with Nathan's tone. Nathan took a breath.
"Sorry, mate. Not your fault. When are you coming back?"
"Not till the first week of Feb."
"February?
And only if another couple of jobs come in."
"I can't wait until then. I need it fixed now. Harry reckons the water might be coming."
"If it floods, I'll be even longer."
"So what am I supposed to do?"
"Look, I can talk you through a few ideas," Dave said. "You got a pen?"
Nathan scrabbled about and found one under the phone. The battered family logbook lay open on the side table and he flipped to a fresh page near the back. He started making notes.
"I've already tried that," he said a few minutes in. "All right, well, in that case..."
Dave started talking again. Nathan stopped writing after a few words. He'd tried that too. He was pretty sure the cool room needed a part. He started to close the logbook, then stopped. As Dave continued speaking in his ear, Nathan flicked back a few pages. Anyone going further than the homestead fence was supposed to make a note of where they were going and when they expected to return. In theory, the logbook was filled in every time. In practice, it was clearly done only as often as anyone remembered. Only half listening now, Nathan read over the most recent entries. Harry was presently out inspecting a water bore, apparently, while Ilse, Nathan traced his finger over her writing, was indeed riding in the paddock bordering the driveway, as Simon had said. It was the same place she'd been the morning Cameron disappeared, Nathan remembered, when her husband had stopped to talk to her for the final time before he drove away. "I'm sorry, mate," Dave was saying, and Nathan tuned into the phone conversation again. The man was clearly waiting for a response. "Thanks anyway. I'll have another crack at fixing it myself," Nathan said. "I wasn't talking about the cool room." Dave's frown was almost audible down the line. "I said I was sorry to hear what happened to Cameron." "Oh, right. Thanks. I liked him a lot. He was a good bloke." "Yeah." What a bloody shock it must have been. It was. Any idea what, you know, made him do it? Nathan flicked the logbook back to the date that Cam had gone missing. He saw his brother's firm capital letters, Leeman's Hill. Nathan felt something hard in his chest. Cameron had expected to return the following day by dinner time, if not before, according to the book. Nathan pulled Cameron's card out of his back pocket. Two words in the same handwriting. "Forgive me." "No," Nathan said. "No idea." The line above Cameron's entry was filled with Liz's cursive letters, noting that she'd taken Sophie's horse for a hack due back that afternoon. On the line above that, Harry had written that he and Simon would be out checking the boars with an expected return by dinner. Bub's misspelled scrawl the previous day noted that he would be staying out in the north paddock before driving to Leeman's Hill to meet his brother. Nathan ran a finger down the surrounding lines. There were no other entries for the day Cameron had gone missing. He flipped back and forward a few pages, then closed the book. "Anyway, mate," Dave was saying. There was an awkward note in his voice. "I realise this isn't a great time for you, but I'm still going to have to invoice you."
"Right."
It came out more bitter than he intended. "No choice, I'm afraid. It cost me $100 in fuel to come up that north road."
"I know."
Nathan's heart sank, as it always did these days when money was involved.
"Look, seeing as it's Christmas, I'll knock a bit off the call-out fee."
"Yeah? Thank you." "No worries, I had to be at Atherton anyway on Thursday, so it wasn't a totally wasted trip."
"You were out at Atherton?"
Something snagged in Nathan's mind. He reached out, but the thought dissolved before he could grasp it.
"Yeah, generator problems, and sorry again to hear about Cam. Bloody shame no one saw him in time to help."
That tug again, sharper this time, but gone as quickly.
"Thanks, Dave. Good luck with the cool room."
Nathan would need it. He hung up and stared at the phone for a long minute. Finally, he turned to head outside and jumped as he saw someone leaning against the door to Wilson's office, watching him. Simon, again. Nathan wondered how long he'd been standing there.
"Did you want something else?"
Nathan started to walk past him, but Simon took a dithery half step at the same time and they came to an awkward halt. "Have the police said any more about what they think happened to Cameron?"
"No. Why?"
"Just interested. I liked him a lot. But the police are taking it seriously."
"I suppose. But it's pretty much only the one cop around here anyway."
"I know, that's so weird." Simon gave a half laugh. "Is he coming out here to talk to us all?"
"To the house?"
The guy hummed with a nervous energy that made Nathan itch.
"Is it a problem if he does?"
"No, of course not." Simon opened his mouth and seemed to think better of it and closed it again. They stared at each other.
"How did you say you met Cam again?"
"In a pub, when we arrived in town."
"From out west,
that's right."
"Quite hard to get here from out west this time of year," Nathan said. "Desert routes are mostly closed."
"Tell me about it. We had to take the scenic route, looped south."
"Right. There were always more jobs than backpackers willing to do them in the outback, but Nathan wondered why Cam had picked this pair.
There wasn't even much to do that time of year. He thought about his phone call the night before. Thank you for thinking of Northern Blooms.
Where did you say you guys were from again?
In England, Hampshire.
Is that in the north?
No, south. Why?
Doesn't matter.
Is it something to do with that woman you're all talking about? Jenna. Simon's voice was low and made Nathan turn his head.
Do you know something about that? Or about her?
Simon caught his tone. No, of course not. Why would I?
You're the one who brought her up.
Look. Simon glanced at the kitchen where they could hear Katie clattering dishes. I've approached this all wrong. You don't know us, I get that. But whatever's happened with your brother... Simon lowered his voice another notch. It's not me or Katie you need to be worrying about. Nathan frowned. The guy was so skittish he was hard to read.
What do you mean? Should I be worried about someone else?
Maybe not worried exactly.
Well, that's what you said.
I know. I meant if you were. For God's sake, say it or don't, mate. Simon swallowed, his Adam's apple bobbing. I heard Cameron having an argument with Harry the week before he died.
So?
Nathan said, because he couldn't think how else to respond. From outside, he heard the faint sound of someone calling his name.
Nathan!
Ilsa. He turned towards her voice, then made himself look back and focus on Simon. I thought you'd want to know, Simon was saying. One night, when Harry was going to turn the generator off, I heard them from the caravan. Not the specifics, I wasn't trying to listen in, but there were definitely words exchanged.
Nathan!
Outside, Ilse's boots clattered up the wooden steps of the veranda. Simon took half a step closer. Listen, Cameron sounded pissed off, more than I'd heard him before. And Harry was getting angry, saying that he'd lived here for more than 40 years, been around longer than Cameron had, something like, I know more about what's going on here than you think.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. Simon shrugged. And that was pretty much it. I think Harry walked away then, and I might not have thought too much of it, but... He stopped as the screen door opened at the end of the hall. Ilsa appeared in the light of the doorway. Oh, good, there you are, she said. She sounded a little breathless. Harry's not around. Are you free? I need your help.
Yep. Give me a sec.
Nathan turned back to Simon. But what? Quick. But then, Harry has never mentioned it. Chapter 21. They had left the track 3 kilometres earlier, and the wheels of Nathan's car bumped over the uneven ground. Hopefully it's still stuck, Ilsa said as the holding pen came into sight in the distance.
Yeah.
Nathan hoped so too. A calf tangled in the fence wire was one thing. Trying to catch a calf running free with wire wrapped around it was an absolute pain in the ass.
There it is. I can see it.
Ilsa pointed through the dusty windscreen. They were the first words they'd exchanged in 15 minutes. Cameron's card lay open and discarded on the seat between them. Forgive me. Nathan scanned the herd of cattle. The cows bristled at the sound of the car engine and began walking almost as one in a wave of movement. A single animal remained, watching her calf wrestle with the wire that trapped its hind leg. I saw it while I was riding, Ilsa had told him earlier in the hallway. I didn't have anything to cut it loose.
Right.
Nathan had said. Something like that was ideally a two-person job anyway.
Give me a minute, I'll meet you at your car.
There had been a slight hesitation. Mine's not working. Take yours?
No worries, keys are on the seat.
Actually, where was Ilse's four-wheel drive? Nathan had wondered as he'd watched her leave. He hadn't seen it since he'd got there. Nathan had written their destination in the logbook by the phone, then ripped out an empty page and scribbled a message for Xander. He'd looked back at Simon, who was still hovering. You sure that's what you heard with Cam and Harry? Nathan said. You're not trying to cause trouble?
No. Why would I?
Have you told anyone else?
Bub or anyone?
No.
Why not?
Bub and Harry seem pretty close.
Harry's close to everyone here.
Not you as much. You're kind of...
Simon shrugged.
Anyway, look, I didn't know Cameron well, but he was good to us, and I like to think I'm a good guy.
He looked at Nathan.
I suppose I'm taking a punt that you are too.
Nathan hadn't known what to say to that. Finally, he had turned and followed Ilsa outside, leaving Simon staring after him. Ilsa had already been sitting in the passenger seat with the engine running. The air conditioning was a relief as Nathan climbed in. They pulled away, heading down the long driveway. The house was far behind them before they'd opened their mouths.
Ilsa, I've found something from Cam.
What was up with Simon?
They had spoken in unison.
Ilsa frowned. What did you say? She said.
Something from Cameron.
Nathan pulled the card from his back pocket, and she had practically snatched it from him. He had kept his eyes on the road as he explained where he and Xander had found it, along with the framed family drawing. Long minutes ticked by as Ilsa sat and stared, her head bowed and her hair falling into her eyes.
Ilsa, Nathan said finally.
She cleared her throat and dropped the card on the seat as though she suddenly couldn't bear to touch it any more.
It's okay. I'm okay. I don't know what to tell you.
Every day, she gave a tight shake of her head.
Every day, I feel like I understand my husband even less.
They hadn't spoken again until they reached the herd. Nathan stopped the car a fair distance away to avoid causing more stress than necessary to the calf and its waiting mother. They got out and Nathan threw open the rear door, rummaging through his equipment bag. He found a couple of pairs of different-sized wire snippers and turned to find Ilsa standing a short distance away, watching. From the way her eyes flicked to the side, he could tell she hadn't been looking at him, but past him, into the back of his four-wheel drive where they had been together once upon a time a million years ago. Nathan slammed the door and started towards the calf. The animal watched warily as they approached. The mother stiffened and flicked her tail. The rest of the herd eyeballed them.
I heard that was how the stockman died, Ilsa said quietly. Trampled in a stampede.
Really?
No.
Nathan started, then stopped as the calf started to bellow. Its mother swished her tail, her muscles quivering.
Keep an eye on her, though. She's not going to like this.
He handed the wire snippers to Ilsa. Are you right with this?
I've done it before. Just tell me when.
Nathan approached slowly, letting the animals get a good look at him for all the use that was. The cattle were so free range they were almost feral. They never got used to seeing people. The mother eyed him up as Nathan got closer to the calf. He could see that the wire was not too tight around its leg. A bit longer, and it might well have pulled itself free. For now, though, it was stuck. Behind him, he heard the mother snort.
She okay back there?
He called.
Yes,
Ilsa said.
Keeping a distance still.
In the dust a few metres away, Nathan could see the telltale tracks of a passing snake. Almost certainly long gone now, but he still took a good long minute to check around nonetheless. Antivenin was expensive and had a short shelf life, so the medical centre in town did not keep supplies.
What happens if you get a bite?
Nathan had heard more than one backpacker demand in disbelief.
Nothing good was the answer, not with the kind of snakes that called the area home.
Nathan liked to live by the rule of thumb that if he got bitten, he would die. End of story. As satisfied as he could be with that, he stepped towards the calf.
I'm going for it now. Okay, say when you're ready.
In a single movement, Nathan put his arms under the calf and heaved. Before the animal knew what had happened, he had flipped it on its side and wrestled it down, lying across it and using his weight to pin it to the ground. It was stunned, then opened its mouth and bellowed its outrage into his face. It kicked and struggled and he leaned into its body, using his knees and elbows to pin it so it could barely move.
Got it,
he grunted.
But Ilse was already there, crouched by the rear legs with the wire snippers in hand. He could feel the heat coming from the calf and hear its heart pounding in its ribcage. It struggled and kicked out.
"Shit,"
he heard Ilse say. "Did it get you?" He leaned in hard until the animal was subdued again. "I'm okay," he heard her move. "I'm going to try the smaller cutters. I don't want to catch its skin." Nathan was straining a little to hold the calf. It was only a couple of months old, but it was strong. It would weigh in heavier than Ilse, and Nathan reckoned he might only have about 20 kilograms on it. It didn't matter, though. He was stronger, and that was enough to make it do what he wanted. It lay still. Nathan listened to the frightened thump of the beast's heart, and all at once, before he could stop himself, he thought of Cameron.
"Ilse!"
he called.
"Yeah?"
She was back by the hind legs. "I tried to ring Jenna Moore in England." He couldn't see her, but sensed her stiffen.
"And?"
Nathan shook his head as best he could. "She wasn't around."
"Where is she?"
He could hear the tension in her voice. Beneath that, a soft snipping sound.
"Bali, according to a colleague."
The calf strained, its eyes rolling in its head. He checked to see the mother was still keeping her distance and leaned in.
"Wherever she is, she's out of phone range, apparently."
Neither said anything for a minute. Snip, snip.
"Why did you call her?"
He still couldn't see Ilse, but she sounded closer. He tried to lift his head to look, and the calf sensed its opportunity. He gripped it harder.
"I dunno,"
he grunted.
"Are you having second thoughts about what she said about Cam?"
"No," he said, too quickly. "It wasn't that." She didn't reply. Finally, he felt her stand up.
"I've finished," she said.
Nathan rolled off the calf, which immediately righted itself and bounded away to its cross-looking mother. She threw Nathan an ungrateful sneer, and the pair ran off together without as much as a backwards glance, happy to be at liberty once more. He sat on the ground, breathing heavily. His muscles ached from the effort of holding the calf down. Above him, Ilse was clutching the strands of cut wire in her hands. She had tears in her eyes.
"Shit, Ilse."
He stood up. "I don't know why I called. I just wondered what she had to say." Ilse fiddled with the wires. "Bali? Apparently." She said nothing for a long minute, then lifted her eyes to look at the horizon. Lots of flights between Bali and Brisbane. Nathan didn't reply. He walked over to his Land Cruiser to get a length of wire to repair the fence. "You think you'd always see someone out here?" Ilse said when he got back. Her eyes were dry now. "But you can't always, can you? If someone's standing still or parked a long way away, it's only when they start moving you even know they were there." Nathan thought about Lehman's Hill. Bub was saying pretty much the same thing the other day. Ilse nodded. "I've heard Bub talk about that. Being able to tell when someone else is around."
"Yeah."
Nathan crouched and used pliers to twist the snapped ends together with a new wire. "I reckon he's right."
"Do you?"
Ilse sounded surprised. Cameron always said that was ridiculous.
"Ah.
You can feel it, though?"
"I don't know," Nathan said. "Sometimes, maybe. It's like..."
He couldn't quite explain it. Like a pulse over the empty land. The strange heaviness that indicated you were sharing the air with someone else. He knew realistically there would be some sort of explanation. Subconscious recognition of something amiss on the landscape. It was nothing more than that, and it wasn't even accurate. He'd been getting false positives out at his own property lately, and there could have been hundreds of times over the years that there had been someone unknown over the horizon. "Cam was probably right," he said finally.
Ilse stood very still, only her eyes moving as she looked out. What about now?
Do I think there's someone else here now?
Yes.
Her face was serious.
Ilse, it's not a science. It's not even a thing.
I know, but can you feel anyone?
He looked up at her. He could hear her breathing and see the wind catch the ends of her hair. He could not hear her heartbeat, but he could feel his own.
Only us, he said truthfully.
He turned back to the wire. He could feel Ilse watching him, but he didn't look back. He focused on his work for a while before opening his mouth again.
Look, there's no way that Jenna is out here, he said. We'd have heard something if she'd come through town.
Unless she didn't go through town.
She'd have had to, you know that. She couldn't stay entirely under the radar. You'd have to have all your supplies keep completely off-road.
It can be done, though. You do it, Bub's done it, and Cameron.
And how many tourists have died in their cars trying to take a shortcut?
Nathan twisted the last piece of wire and checked the tension. Satisfied, he stood up and stopped when he saw the look on Ilse's face.
What is it?
Why are you so fixed on this? Cameron tried to call Jenna as well, Ilse said. 3 times.
Nathan stared.
When?
Once 2 weeks ago, then twice more in the week before he died.
He used the office line, not the main house one. I can see the number on the bill online. She's a florist in England, isn't she? I looked her up.
Nathan nodded.
I don't think he spoke to her, Ilse said. The calls are very short, all less than 30 seconds.
Why would he wait so long to call her? He'd known for a few weeks she was thinking about contacting him.
Maybe it took her that long to actually reach him, Ilse said. He might have got an email or something. I don't know. I don't have his password.
She stopped.
Or maybe she didn't get in touch at all, and the waiting was driving him crazy. Looking back now, he'd been worried since he'd heard she'd rung the police station, but it had been getting worse, and he made some other calls near last week as well.
To who?
To St. Helens, the medical centre up there for one.
Was he sick?
Not that he said, and he wasn't a patient there as far as they would tell me. But then Cameron didn't like to go and see Steve at the clinic either, so who knows? He called one of the hotels in St. Helens too.
Which one?
There were exactly 3 accommodation options in St. Helens. The cheap one.
Did he make a booking?
If he did, it wasn't under his own name. There was something hard in Ilse's face now. They had nothing under Jenna's name either. Neither did the other places. Nathan felt an unpleasant sensation creep through him, and he had the sudden urge to check over his shoulder. There was nothing there but cattle and stubby grass and the horizon. All was quiet. Ilse was watching him closely.
You really don't think Cameron had anything to worry about with that woman? She said.
Nathan hesitated, for real this time. A long and disloyal silence that stretched on and spoke volumes.
Ilse nodded.
Because Cameron was acting like he did.
Chapter 22.
They barely spoke on the way back. Nathan drove while Ilse stared out of the window, chewing her nails and occasionally turning Cameron's card over in her fingers.
You need to tell Glenn, Nathan said, about Cameron trying to call Jenna.
I already tried. Ilse didn't look over. He wasn't at the police station when I called last night.
Did you leave a message?
No. I got diverted to the Brisbane switchboard. I didn't want to...
Ilse sighed, still staring out at the passing landscape. I'll try him again.
She didn't say anything else until the homestead came into sight up ahead. I'll get out here, she said as they passed the stables. I put away the horse quickly earlier. I just want to check on her. Nathan pulled to a stop. "Ilsa," he said as she climbed out. She waited. He wanted to tell her it would all be okay. Instead, he shook his head. Nothing. She slammed the door, and Nathan watched her walk away. When he pulled up outside the house, he could see the girls riding in the far exercise yard. Liz was looking on while Xander sat nearby in the shade, flipping through a sketchbook in his lap. Nathan walked over and leaned on the railing next to his mum. He waited for her to tell Lo to keep her heels down, but she didn't. Her eyes were dull. "Everything all right?" he said. "Steve called from the clinic." Liz stumbled over the word. "Autopsy has been completed. We're right to go ahead with the funeral." Nathan thought about Cameron's call to the medical centre in St. Helens. They didn't find any other health problems. Liz shook her head vaguely and didn't ask why. Xander looked up, though. "Do you want to have a rest?" Nathan said. "I'll help the girls with the horses." He waited for Liz to argue, but she just nodded. With visible effort, she pushed herself away from the railing and trudged towards the house. "She's been bad all morning," Xander said. His voice was a little cool. Lo nearly fell off earlier and she didn't even notice.
"Right,"
Nathan said.
"Mate, listen, I'm sorry about going without you just now."
"It's fine."
It wasn't, Nathan suspected.
But Xander seemed distracted as he looked up from the sketchbook. "Did you show Ilsa the card from Uncle Cam?"
"Yeah."
Nathan told him what Ilsa had said. He hesitated, then told him what else she'd said about the phone calls to St. Helens. Xander frowned. Did Cam think Jenna might be in St. Helens?
"I don't know, maybe he did."
Xander's eyes fell again at the sketchbook in his lap. It was full of Lo's paintings.
"What are you looking at?"
Nathan said. Xander handed him the book open to the page he'd been examining. Nathan flicked his eyes across the painting. It showed two girls, one smaller than the other, and both with dirty blonde hair. It was hard to tell how old they were, but the bigger one had her arm encased in a colourful sling. The two girls stood in the foreground of the picture with bright orange earth under their feet. Behind them, looming large, was a big dark shape that blocked the line of the horizon. It had been drawn by someone young but skilled and was entirely recognizable. "The Stockman's grave, isn't it?" Nathan said. Beside the headstone, Lo had painted another shape. It was shadowy and unfinished, but had a strangely human quality. A woman, Nathan thought, for reasons he couldn't quite qualify. While the girls were clearly identifiable, the woman's features were formless and elusive. Nathan looked up from the picture. Cameron's daughters were riding now over by the far fence. "I didn't know they'd been out to the grave." Xander pointed at the sling on the painted girl's arm. "Not recently, anyway. Me neither." Nathan raised his voice and called out,
"Girls!"
His tone made them pull up their horses immediately.
"Come here, I need to talk to you. Are we in trouble?"
Sophie said, as she cantered over and drew to a halt in front of him in a swirl of dust.
"No, I wanted to ask about this picture, Lo."
Lo leaned in, but as he held it up, her face changed. She didn't reach out to take it. Behind her, Sophie craned her neck to see. Her horse was disturbed, turning in tight circles. Nathan could see the reins wrapped tight around Sophie's good hand, the leather biting into her knuckles. "What's this painting of, Lo?" Nathan prompted. "It's obviously the Stockman's grave," Sophie snapped. The chatty girl from the previous evening was gone. Her expression was wary, and Nathan could see her good hand grip the reins even more tightly. "I didn't know you'd been out there." "Once, with Mummy." Nathan pointed at the shadowy woman. "That's your mum there?"
"Of course,"
Sophie cut in before Lo could answer. "Who else would it be?"
"I don't know," Nathan said truthfully. "Maybe a friend of hers? Mummy doesn't have any friends.
What? Lo said as Sophie scowled at her. None of us do.
So you went out there with your mum, Xander said.
When?
Ages ago, Lo said.
No, not ages ago, just after I hurt my arm.
Sophie's horse twisted again, and she was forced to whip her head around to look at Nathan.
What did you do there?
The sisters glanced at each other, but Nathan had the sense that they were not being deliberately evasive.
Nothing. We got there, but then... Sophie frowned. We just drove home again. Mum said it was supposed to be a picnic.
But we didn't have any food, Lo said.
We did. Later, remember, we had it by the stables instead.
Lo frowned, her tiny face creasing.
We only stayed at the grave for a few minutes, Sophie said.
Yeah, Lo nodded. I didn't like it.
And nothing else happened at all?
Nathan watched his nieces shake their heads.
All right. Thanks, girls.
Sophie's horse was still straining, and Nathan could see the whites of its eyes as they rolled. She loosened the reins and shot off across the yard.
Lo remained behind, her pony more docile.
Is Mummy going to be in trouble?
No. Why would she be?
Because you look sad.
Did he? Sorry. Nathan rearranged his face into what he hoped was a more neutral expression. He started to close the sketchbook, then stopped.
Why didn't you finish drawing your mum in the picture?
Lo, suddenly unsure, looked for her sister who was out of earshot across the yard. She faltered, then leaned in on her pony.
Daddy didn't like it,
she whispered.
What do you mean?
He saw my picture and was cross with Mummy. I didn't want to make it worse.
Ilse was no longer in the stables by the time Nathan had walked the girls' horses back. Lo had been distracted, losing concentration and control of her pony a couple of times. She didn't know why Daddy was upset, she'd said. She just thought that he was. Nathan and Xander had exchanged a look as Lo grew increasingly worried and hadn't pushed it. After Lo nearly fell off for a second time, Nathan asked Xander to take the girls inside and find something safer to do. He had led the horses to the stables and taken his time settling them in as he thought about things. It was as he was walking the long way back that he heard the sound. He was under a window outside one of the cabins and stopped. The soft catch of breath. Someone was crying. He walked around the front and up the steps. The inside of the cabin was a surprise. It had been converted into a proper schoolroom with a whiteboard and small desks and alphabet posters covering the walls. A lot of it appeared homemade, and Nathan thought he recognised Ilse's handiwork on much of it. Katie was sitting in a large beanbag in the reading corner. She wiped her eyes as Nathan came in.
Sorry, he said. I heard you outside.
It's okay. Katie blew her nose on a shredded tissue. With a little difficulty, she pulled herself out of the beanbag and stood up.
I should be getting back anyway. What's wrong?
Nothing.
Do you want me to get Simon?
No, I'm fine.
Nathan found a roll of paper towel by the art station and handed her a sheet.
Just take a minute.
Thanks.
Katie took it gratefully and wiped her eyes. Nathan wandered around while she gathered herself.
The classroom was a lot nicer than anything he and Cam and Bub had had when they were kids. Their schoolwork was mostly done at the kitchen table or not at all. On the teacher's desk was a laptop with some post-it notes written in what he presumed was Katie's handwriting.
A thick teaching folder supplied by School of the Air lay open, and Nathan remembered his conversation with Sophie on the veranda.
I don't think she's a real teacher.
He looked up. Katie was blowing her nose again. He flicked through a few pages in the folder. The lessons were all laid out for the home supervisor to follow.
introduce the unit, he read. Hold up the book and say to students, today we will be exploring picture books. We'll be learning about characters in this story. Show students the front cover, ask them to read the title out loud. Nathan frowned. He read on. The instructions were all there. Didn't seem too hard to supervise if you followed him. He thought he could have a crack at it himself at a push. He closed the folder and saw Katie watching him. Better? He said.
Yes.
Her voice was a touch too bright, and her makeup had smudged slightly, making her eyes look strangely dramatic.
I'm just a bit homesick. I'll be okay.
Are you going back to the house? He said. I'll walk with you. She opened the cabin door and he followed her down the steps into the blinding daylight.
Are you in charge here now?
Katie said as they walked.
Me?
No.
Who is then?
It was a good question. Ilsa, I suppose. Depends what you want. Nathan looked over in time to see something flicker across the woman's face.
Simon and I need to move on soon. Not because of what's happened, Katie added quickly. I'd actually discussed it with Cameron, but...
She stopped. Right, Nathan said. When were you thinking?
I'm not sure. Soon. Next week, maybe. I have to check with Simon.
Well, just make sure you say goodbye to someone before you go. If a worker goes missing, we're required to report it in case they're... He stopped. Lying dead in the middle of nowhere. For their own safety.
It's not that we're not grateful for the work, Katie said quickly.
It's fine. No one stays forever. Will you go back to England?
I want to, but... Katie shook her head. Simon isn't ready yet. He likes it out here.
Right, Nathan said again. He had the distinct sense he was missing something. You two been together long?
3 years.
Her voice was completely flat. We're engaged. That may be so, but Bub was right for once, Nathan thought with some surprise. She wasn't happy. If you need to talk to someone, he said eventually. Someone not on the property, I mean. There's always Steve at the clinic.
Why do you say that? Katie said, a sudden sharpness in her face.
No reason. Sometimes workers have stuff they don't want to discuss with their employers, that's all.
Oh, she nodded. Sorry, I'm not usually like this, I promise. I'm struggling a bit with everything that's happened.
It's okay, I don't blame you.
My head's all over the place, Katie said. I know Cameron was your brother and I'd only known him a few months, but I can't stop thinking about what happened.
Across the yard, the windows of the house were dark against the daylight. There was no one else around and it felt like they were all alone. Harry's car was still absent from the driveway. Nathan hesitated, feeling a little treacherous. Simon said he heard Cameron and Harry arguing one night.
Oh, yeah, Katie said. He mentioned that. Can't have been too much of an